honey.
Yeah, it's all about keeping an additive positude. Positude additive.
Okay, someone needs another cup of coffee. A little bit more alert for the day in front of us. Welcome, everybody, to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. You got 3.5 minutes. 3.5 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Great having you there. And we've got a lot of stuff we have to talk about. You know what I want to start with, though? I've been telling you about this contest we do. This contest that we do every day, the Golden Age Giveaway at 8 o'clock, where I give you a secret word, and then you text that word to our regular text-in line. That's all you have to do, and you have a chance of winning $2,025. The only people who are in this contest are the listeners of this radio station and our other Lotus radio stations. So you have a very good chance of winning. And in fact, we have a KVI listener who won on Tuesday, Cheryl, KVI listener Cheryl in Tacoma. I called her yesterday to tell her, hey, you just won $2,025 because you texted a word to our text in line. Hi, Cheryl.
Yes.
Cheryl,
hi.
This is John Carlson calling Talk Radio 570 KVI. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Thank you.
Well, I don't know if you knew this officially, but you are the latest winner of the KVI Golden Age Giveaway Contest. You just won $2,025. Congratulations.
Hallelujah. That's wonderful. And I'm a golden ager, so that's good.
I want our listeners to know just how easy it was for you to win this contest. All you had to do was text the word, and boom, that entered you automatically into the contest. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, my husband and I live in Tacoma, and we have a wonderful little granddaughter. We're both retired. I was a teacher for 30-some years, and we're just enjoying retirement.
Oh, so, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Do you know what you're going to do with the money yet?
No. Put it in the bank.
You've got that is exactly what you expect a KVI listener to say. What do you like most about our station?
Well, I like that it's conservative in this very liberal going to pot state.
Yes, and when you say pot, that means literally and figuratively.
Right, that's right.
Again, that's KVI listener Cheryl in Tacoma. So when I give you that secret word at about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock, just know that, hey, this can happen. You might actually be the winner. Okay, we have a lot of fun stuff we have to get into here on The Commute with Carlson. Earlier this week, I talked about the most radical tax proposals ever seriously put forward by a legislative body in the state of Washington. It was actually late last week, over the weekend, the House and Senate Democrats, remember, they have a very comfortable majority in both houses. Too comfortable. It helps to have more competition in the legislature, because it forces you to talk to the other side and, you know, deal and compromise, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes compromise is not such a bad thing in politics, especially when you don't have the majority, right? But the ideas they came out with were truly radical, like a proposed tax on wealth, not on spending, not on what you buy, not on what you invest, but simply because you're worth a certain amount of money, they're going to charge you a fee to live in Washington state. That's actually being proposed, that everyone who is worth over $50 million, and think there's a lot of business people worth well over that whose money is tied into their company, they are going to be charged, assessed a fee, a penalty, just to live here. Other countries have tried this and have given up on the idea when people started moving away. France gave up on the idea. In Scandinavia, the idea has tried and failed. So that would actually make Washington State the one state in America where you would be taxed simply for being wealthy. Another tax would allow cities and counties to collect 4 times more property tax revenue than they are currently allowed to collect without a vote of the people. Currently, local governments at all levels, your city and your county, in other places where they have property taxes, Sound Transit gets some money from property tax revenue. They are only allowed to collect 1% more from one year to the next, plus any additional new construction. They're only allowed to collect 1% more from year to year unless the people vote to authorize more money. So the people will have the final word on whether it's reasonable or not. You have to make your case, just like, say, school levies have to make their case to the people before they get approved. The legislature is willing to lift that 1% cap and allow a economic formula that would allow them to collect 4 times more than that. 4 times more. So from 1% to over 4%. That's pretty radical. That idea is percolating right now. And I don't mean it's introduced by some backbencher who's just trying to play to the far left progressive base. This is what leadership, the leaders, are proposing. And then there's going to be an income tax. You're saying, well, wait a minute, whoa, hold on, John. And I know there can't be an income tax because, number one, the state constitution says all taxation must be uniform. You can't charge a higher sales tax rate on a wealthy person than on a poor person. You can't charge a tax on income at a higher rate for wealthy people than poor people. And we just passed an initiative last year. We qualified an initiative for the ballot. The legislature was petrified at seeing it possibly head for the ballot. And so they said, we'll just make it the law. No income tax anywhere. So there can't be an income tax. Here's how they're trying to get away with that. They're not going to tax the wage earner. They're going to tax the wage payer. So a company that pays its employees over $170,000 a year will have to pay a tax on everything above that amount. Again, those are just three insanely radical ideas that are sure to make wealthy people and successful businesses head somewhere else. And, you know, some businesses, not so easy to move. You know, if your business involves a lot of acreage, you know, and big buildings and the like that you built, that's not going to be easy to do. If you are a major retailer, it's shutting down a store and reopening it somewhere else, no easy feat. But think of high-tech businesses. You can always lease office space and just fold up your laptop and open it up there in some other business-friendly state. So we are facing daunting prospects of economic uncertainty and division in the state. Interesting. Some of you remember Christine Gregoire, Democratic Governor Chris Gregoire. She is, again, a Democrat. She's just dismayed that proposals like this are being taken seriously. Being taken seriously, for heaven's sakes, they're close to having the votes to pass it. So that was earlier this week. Okay, that was Tuesday's show. Now it's Thursday, and the Democrats have announced what their transportation tax package will be. Remember, we have three separate budgets in Washington State. We have a general fund, which is most of government. And then we have a capital budget. That's a separate budget where you bond money and build buildings. And then you have your third budget. That's your transportation budget, which is paid for primarily by transportation taxes, like the gas tax. Well, the Democrats say we need higher gas taxes and we need other transportation taxes as well, because drivers are not paying enough. Have a listen. Here's Molly Shen from Como 4.
Democratic state Senate lawmakers are considering a gas tax hike as part of an effort to address a $1 billion transportation budget shortfall. The Senate's proposal would raise the gas tax by another 6 cents per gallon, bringing it to 55.4 cents. The state would then raise the tax by another 2% annually to account for inflation starting the following year. Electric vehicle fees would also increase to $275, and hybrid vehicle fees would go up to $100. They, too, would see a yearly 2% increase. Both of these hikes would take effect on July 1st. Lawmakers say the Senate gas tax proposal would raise $1.5 billion over the next 6 years.
So keep in mind, they are going, they're automatically escalating these taxes every year by throwing in an inflation factor. Annual tax increases they don't have to vote for every year. Your taxes just automatically escalate. Aren't you tired of these people? Haven't you had enough? We'll get more details from our friend Andrew Barkus. Andrew Barkus is the Republican point guy on transportation in the State House of Representatives. He joins us, well, right after I give you the Golden Age giveaway contest word of the morning at 8 o'clock. So he'll join us about 8:05. Like I said, it's going to be a very busy day. We have a lot of stuff that is going on. By the way, Dow Constantine got a new job. You probably heard, after 16 years running King County, and I'll let you decide how well he's done on the issue of eradicating homelessness. At one point, he was part of the committee to, quote, end homelessness, close quote, in 2005. And it's been since, I think, 2009 that he has been county executive, 16 years. He is not running for another term. But what do you know? The one job in government, the one job in government that pays more than Dow Constantine's job, other than Husky football coach, the one job that pays more than, I think Dow gets $259,000, King County executive,
okay,
is being the CEO of Sound Transit. So guess who applied to be the next director of Sound Transit? And guess who appointed as county executive more than half of the Sound Transit board? So guess who the Sound Transit board just appointed earlier this week to be the new director of Sound Transit? Dow Constantine. Salary bump from about $250,000 to $450,000. And it could go as high as $600,000.
Now, will the Sound Transit have to pay into this employee tax?
No, but you will. of course, being a government employee, that means his pension is ratcheted to his highest earnings, his highest, I think, 2 or 3 years earnings. So that's a pretty lucrative little bump.
It's hard work losing that much money.
So Dow Constantine says, you know, I might just leave my job early.
Serving since 2009, Constantine has said he will not be seeking another term, but he does have eyes on another job.
As you surely know by now, I've been nominated to be the next chief executive officer of Sound Transit.
And he even suggested he might step down as King County executive before his term is up in order to take that position.
Should the board at its meeting tomorrow agree, it would mean leaving this office of King County executive sooner than I had planned.
So there are two members of the King County Council, an ardently liberal and an ardently left-wing member of the county council running to replace him, along with John Arthur Wilson, who you heard on the show yesterday. And my guess is they would probably appoint a caretaker for the remaining, 7 months of his second term. Anyway, it is 20 minutes after, almost 21 minutes now, after 6 o'clock in the morning on the John Carlson show. You know, I'm a little curious why the rest of the news media isn't kicking up more of a fuss over appointing more than half the people to the committee that decides whether you get the job or not. It is 21 minutes after 6. So great having you with me this morning, Good morning. The commute continued. 26 minutes after 6 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort III standing by patiently, the first social media sweep of the morning. Philip J.
Yeah, it's such a tantalizing story. One of those I told you so's. I got to continue with what you were talking about in the last segment. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And this is the report that the city of Seattle's essentially tax on high-income earners is not generating the money that its socialist supporters had promised. Brandy Cruz has the receipts here. She snagged a post on social media from Shama Sawant back in 2020. And Sawant's post said, "Our tax Amazon movement has made history. Seattle City Council just voted to pass an Amazon tax on the largest corporations to fund affordable housing and jobs to begin to end racist gentrification. This is entirely because of the thousands of working people, unions, and socialists." That was Shama Sawant's answer in 2020. And then, of course, yesterday, the report came down. We mentioned it on yesterday's report. Brandy Cruz pulled the post by Channel 7, Cairo 7 News, that is headlined, quote, "This is catastrophic," end quote. "Seattle payroll tax revenues $47 million short as jobs leave city." So, like we said,
jobs leave city. That's
we told
an interesting
you
headline.
That this was a likely outcome, and lo and behold, it is.
As the band Weezer once said, say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so. Look out, Jay Inslee.
So this is, again, yeah. You're referring to the head tax or the...
Right, yeah. This is the $47 million high-income earners.
High-income earners.
They call it the payroll expense tax, mm-hmm. but it goes after people that have a salary of, I think you were talking about in the last segment, $140,000 and up. And if it's over $400,000, you pay at an even higher rate based on your company's total payroll. Now, Jay Inslee, here we go again. Fox 13 news anchor David Rose, he has posted that a person that previously convicted person that Governor Inslee granted, I guess he commuted his sentence for, 69-year-old Eugene Smith, was released from prison in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
When Governor Inslee commuted his sentence for robbery and assault.
Mm-hmm.
He has been rearrested. The Snohomish County Regional Drug Task Force arrested him last Friday for a bail of $100,000, and it's going to be narcotics possession. It looks like intent to distribute narcotics. So this is very much similar to
drug dealer
a week or so ago when it was a guy named Percy Levy in Everett that was arrested 9 days ago on drug trafficking and a gun possession.
What a great record arrest. Inslee has on this. And here he was trying to let Timothy Pauley, mm-hmm. Triple murderer out of prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So I just don't know.
As the band Weezer once said, say it so.
Another.
Just like a record that skips. Yeah. You keep playing that line over and over again.
Another questionable decision by Governor Jay Inslee to add to the many, many that he has made.
And by the way, Percy Levy was a, quote, criminal justice reform advocate, which means let him out earlier. That's lib speak for let him out earlier. And he had testified at a hearing on a bill that would have done just that and was congratulated by the committee chairman, Roger Goodman, mm-hmm. for how he had, in a very exemplary, fine way of showing an example, had cleaned up his own act. And he was arrested that day.
Yeah, right.
Arrested that day.
Great timing. And then next hour on the social media sweep, I've got an update on Tesla rage, where a woman got out of a car and keyed a Tesla in the middle of a parking lot. There has been an arrest made. I will tell you about that next hour from Issaquah.
Goody. These are the fun stories. This is when someone is caught doing something and they're too dense to realize that Teslas are saturated in cameras.
Bingo, yes.
And so she does this. She's caught on camera. It's posted on social media. Who is this woman? So you can imagine she had a case of the night sweats for about 36 hours until someone's, I know her. All right. Looking forward to that. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We have an exciting announcement to make here at 570 KVI, and we're going to make it in 1 hour and 12 minutes during our 7:50 segment. Special announcement here at 570 KVI. A year where we've been making a lot of special announcements, I guess. Anyway, that's going to be coming up again during the 7:50 break. If you have a chance, please be listening. Oh, my goodness. Did you see the congressional hearing yesterday with members of National Public Radio and Public Broadcasting Service trying to make the case for continued taxpayer subsidies of NPR and PBS? The controversial head of NPR, Catherine Maher, M-A-H-E-R, like Bill Maher, no relation, though. Catherine Maher appeared before a House panel to make the case for why taxpayers should continue putting money into NPR's bank accounts so they can continue broadcasting. And Texas Congressman Brandon Gill, he's from the area not far from the airport in Dallas-Fort Worth, Grapevine area of Texas. He's only 31 years old, and he had a series of questions for the CEO of NPR, and he was relentless. He was polite. He gave her a chance to respond, but he just destroyed her with her own tweets. Have a listen.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and I, as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
It has evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
I apologize. I don't recall that I did.
Okay.
I'd no doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay.
Now, think about that. She sent out a tweet, liberal white lady virtue signaling, I took a day off to read The Case for Reparations. And here she is sitting in front of a congressional committee. Now, I've never read that book.
Might be the most truthful thing she said.
Well, she was under oath. You're not under oath when you tweet. You're under oath when you're before the House committee. Anyway, let's continue. Again, this is Brandon Gill, 31-year-old Brandon Gill, grilling the CEO of National Public Radio, Catherine Maher.
Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't? You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
I think I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
It sounds like you're saying that white people feel superior.
I don't believe that anybody feels that way, sir. I was just reflecting on my own experiences.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did. You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt, yes, reparations, yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted. Okay, how much reparations have you personally paid?
Sir, I don't believe that I've ever paid reparations.
Okay, just for everybody else.
I'm not asking anyone to pay
reparations. Seems to be what you're suggesting. Do you believe that looting is morally wrong?
I believe that looting is illegal, and I refer to it as counterproductive. I think it should be prosecuted.
Do you believe it's morally wrong, though?
Of course.
Of course. Then why did you refer to it as counterproductive? It's a very different way to describe it.
It is both morally wrong and counterproductive, as well as being
illegal. You tweeted, it's hard to be mad about protests in reference to the BLM protests, not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression. You didn't condemn the looting. You said that it was counterproductive. NPR also promoted a book called In Defense of Looting. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars?
I'm unfamiliar with that book, sir, and I don't believe that was at my time at NPR.
You tweeted that you read that book, but...
I don't believe that I did read that.
Oh, man. Talk about being undressed figuratively in front of a nationwide television audience. Wow. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the head of NPR. Now, I don't think that NPR or PBS should be getting public money. It's not because they both have, particularly National Public Radio, an arch-liberal, woke approach to news reporting, news gathering, and feature presentations. That's not it. The reason why NPR and PBS should not be getting public subsidies is that the communications media world has completely changed from the 1960s when they both were given subsidies. They were both given subsidies when you didn't have hundreds and hundreds of TV stations and you didn't have as many radio stations and, you know, both terrestrial and XM satellite and podcasts and whatnot. NPR is often, especially in blue cities, large cities, one of the most highly rated stations in their respective markets. They got plenty of listeners in liberal land listening to NPR. They used to have a more diverse listening audience. They don't have as diverse listening audience in terms of viewpoint as they used to because they have become more like MSNBC. But they still have a very healthy audience. Well, let the listeners pay their bills.
That's what the tote bags are for.
Let the listeners pay their bills through pledge drives or, frankly, how about advertising? You know, they take breaks on NPR, but they just play, you know, flute music and classical music and, you know, ballet, you know, show tunes. And the bottom line here is they could sell advertising and do just fine. So why don't they? Why are they still, you know, on the public nipple when they clearly have a market for their product? There's plenty of wealthy liberals who would buy services and merchandise advertised on NPR and would gladly pitch in contributions. So that's why NPR doesn't need a public subsidy and certainly doesn't deserve one. You can bet that if NPR were as far to the right as they are to the left, that Democrats would be howling for NPR to relinquish their public subsidies.
Yeah, Netflix basically stole the NPR funding model. They were kind of the original subscription streaming service. So you give us money, we'll keep doing our radio broadcasts.
Sure.
So, and that's what Netflix did, and now all these other streaming platforms have done the same thing. You pay a subscription fee or an annual fee or your pledge, and we'll keep delivering the content.
I mean, you have ardently political late-night TV shows. They have a market. They make money. They sell advertising. Why shouldn't NPR and PBS do the same? There's just no need and no justification. Let's put it this way. If NPR did not exist and someone had, you know, an idea, let's put together a liberal-leaning network that really appeals to suburban white women and angry folks who live in the cities and makes them feel intellectually and morally superior to other people around them. We'll have a group, you know, a program called All Things Considered, and we'll do this and we'll do that. Okay, they would create such a business and the business might actually succeed. There is a market for that after all. So why do you need government? You don't see the government subsidizing Fox. Just get money from people who agree with what you're doing. It's that simple. It's also 6:48, which means our good buddy Lars Larson's right around the corner. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. There's my buddy Lars Larson, our noon to three host this Thursday morning. How are you, Lars?
I'm doing well, John. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and I'm following the fallout from this entire episode of earlier this week, the phone chat that was taking place that included inadvertently and ardently anti-Trump journalist, and the attempt to use that as a cudgel to drive Michael Walls and Pete Hegseth out of the administration. But it doesn't appear to be working.
No, it doesn't. And imagine this, because I want people to take this. Some of this is 8 years ago. You had the Trump administration coming in. You had General Mike Flynn, who, not sure about these days, but back then he knew where all the bodies were buried. And the left knew that, including James Comey, I think the very flawed and I think corrupt former head of the FBI. And they just determined to take him out. And they knew that if they could take down somebody early on in Trump's first term, that it would have lasting effects. And it did. And they took him down with an entirely false story, which we now know was false. They went to the vice president, yes, Pence, and lied to him and said, hey, Flynn has been off talking to the Russians and breaking the law by talking about things that are not allowed to be talked about under the Logan Act until he took office maybe a dozen days later. And they got that to work because Pence never bothered to go back and take a look at what he actually said to the Russian ambassador. And they blew up a part of the first Trump administration, and it had lasting effects. They want to do the same thing this time. I don't think it's going to work. Trump's seen this movie before.
Yeah, they have. And in the past, they've always relied on someone in the administration to kind of turn on someone else.
Yep.
And say, oh, that wasn't appropriate. Oh, you know. And again, it's not working. They're showing much more discipline. They're kind of on to how this game in D.C. works.
And they've tried to make it fatal. Do you remember when Jay Inslee made critical mistakes that cost the state?
Every day. You're referring to something else. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, $50 million for the state mental health institution. And it was like, yeah, he made a mistake. It cost the state $50 million that dealt with a very critical population.
Well, he lost our accreditation.
Yeah.
Our accreditation for that mental health facility.
Did anybody get fired over that, John?
Oh, heavens no. Don't overreact, Lars.
It doesn't happen to Democrats, does it? But when it comes to Republicans, if they think that, because they have no other cracks out there right now, you take a look at this, what would have been the State of the Union address, but it's not technically a State of the Union address, and every single thing Trump talked about, he was hugely popular from 57% to into the 70s. And the Democrats have nothing that's working for them. They're at the historic low point for the Democrat Party, and they have to find something not to, that they can say, hey, look at this. This is a fatal error. Well, it was inadvertently informing, and it was inadvertent. It was a mistake. A journalist, a very left-wing journalist, about something that was going to happen 2 hours later, right?
Yep.
And they want him to dismantle his administration over that? No.
Lars Larson, our noon to three hosts. Every day of the work week, Talk Radio 570 KVI. When we come back, I want to introduce you to a fascinating new organization. Well, not new organization, but an organization you might not have heard of before. And boy, do they do important work at the intersection of drug and sex trafficking. You'll talk to a survivor of that collision as the commute with Carlson continues right after your 7 o'clock headlines. And welcome back. Hour number two of the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I hope your morning is going well. By the way, kind of a big buildup for the storm to end all storms yesterday. And yeah, it was stormy. And yeah, it rained and hailed and lots of lightning and lots of thunder, but not as bad as we had feared.
Someone on Instagram posted a picture of a white plastic lawn chair tipped over, and it said, Seattle 2025, we will rebuild.
So, yes, it was wet. It was a nuisance, but it was also mostly overnight, or at least late at night. We came through.
I heard a lot.
Came through it okay.
Yeah, I heard a lot of descriptions that the worst storm cells, the most intense ones, were just in some of the mountainous areas, like Hurricane Ridge, apparently. Got a whole lot of lightning strikes and
yes.
That's where some of the most intense hail was. It just didn't happen to be in populated areas was kind of how it, it ended up occurring yesterday.
And even before that, the day before, you had 5 inches of rain in the Olympic. And over Puget Sound, 0.01 inch, meaning 1/100th of an inch of precipitation. So they had 500 times more precipitation in the Olympic Mountains, which I'm looking at right now, not that far away, than we had here in the Puget Sound area. Again, this was day before yesterday. And then, you know, the rain yesterday, but not nearly the deluge in most populated areas that we had thought. All right. Here's an interesting statistic. USA Facts. That's the entity that Steve Ballmer created, which is a pretty good clearinghouse of information. Lists the cities with the largest homeless population in 2024. New York City and the county leads the way. Los Angeles comes in second. Chicago comes in third with 18,800 homeless. Seattle King County comes in right behind them at 16,800. Now, what is interesting about this is that we keep hearing about the terrible homeless problem in San Francisco. San Francisco has less than half the homeless than we have. Less than half. And proportionately, again, proportionately, when you say, you know, how many homeless people per population, we probably are the nation's leader in homelessness. And still, no sign that we're really making much headway on solving the underlying problem, which is drugs. Drug trafficking, homelessness, sex trafficking, it's a brutal intersection. And Sarah Ann Hamilton has been at the crossroads of that intersection. She was trafficked herself, and she got through it and is now working to help people who have been or are being sex trafficked in and around Seattle to get out of that life. She's the director of an organization called The More We Love. Again, a local organization. Sarah Ann Hamilton joins me on the John Carlson Show this morning. How are you, Sarah?
Good morning. How are you? I'm doing good. I was listening to you introduce me, and I'm like, hey, that lady sounds really cool.
Well,
so I appreciate the great introduction.
You've gone through hell and back. Tell us your story. Tell us how you fell into it, how they got you, and then how you were trafficked, how that worked, and how you got out of it.
Okay. So my name is Sarah Ann. I'm the Director of Survivor Services at The More We Love. I am from Seattle, Washington. I share the same story as a lot of girls. There was some abuse going on at home. I wasn't safe at home, and I left home because of that.
How old were you?
And when I left, I was 12. I was 12 years old. And when I left home, I slept on the streets for a little bit, like just one of those street kids.
Okay, so can you stop there? Because, you know, weren't there any other relatives you could go to? Did you, you know, friends you could go to?
I wish I could say that there was, but I think that my family was dealing with not wanting to really believe that the stuff that was happening was happening.
Okay.
And I come, you know, my grandparents and my mom come from a generation like, don't let the neighbors know. Don't, you know, it wasn't something that you talked about. And so it was easier just to turn a blind eye to it. Me and my mom have worked really hard to rebuild our relationship. And I can say now that we have healed from that. But, you know, she was in a situation where she didn't feel safe either, and she was just trying to do the best that she could at that moment.
Okay, so at age 12, you hit the streets and slept on the streets.
Yes, I slept under bridges. I hung out a lot at the Starbucks in in downtown Seattle where that Starbucks was.
Yeah.
I was just kind of running amok. I didn't really know what to do. Was very hungry all the time. I even have, you know, eaten out of a garbage can, all of that. And I met a girl who always had money for McDonald's, always had a little couple bucks in her pocket. And so you would be surprised what you will do when those hunger pains kicked in. And I asked her what she did for money. And she explained to me that she was a hoe, that she worked on Aurora, and asked if I would come with her. And I did. And I turned my first date, and it just kind of snowballed from there. I didn't really know what a pimp was or anything before that. Like, I had no idea. I was 12. Come to find out, she had a pimp. So I got thrown into that situation. And
if you don't mind me asking, what year was this, Sarah?
Let's see. I'm 45 now. So let's see. It was 93, 92.
Okay. So you're a 12-year-old girl selling yourself on Aurora Avenue.
Yes.
For meal money.
Yes.
Were you using drugs at the time? Were you?
No. Drugs didn't come till much, much later.
Okay. No, continue.
And so I just got into this life. And, you know, it's hard for a 12-year-old girl to, you know, I steered away from that girl because her pimp was was very abusive. And I wanted to, I thought, oh, I can just do this on my own. But you're 12 years old, 13 years old, and, you know, you can't get a hotel room. But I had, you know, lots of money in my pocket. So I was constantly getting robbed or taken advantage of by other people in the streets. And then that's where the groomers come in, and they make you believe, like, hey, you need me. You need me to protect you. You need me to make sure you have a hotel room. And you want to belong to somewhere. You know, you want to feel like you're a part of something. And so it gets really easy for a girl that age to fall into that narrative. And I fell into it. And I stayed into that narrative for quite a while.
While this was going on around, weren't there any people at all who recognized that you were a girl? I mean, a child, and tried to help you? A cop? A customer with a conscience who says, for crying out loud, this is a 13-year-old, this is a 12-year-old. Counselors, you know, people from, the city who are supposedly trying to do outreach?
I wish I could tell you that there was, but there wasn't. And I'll tell you a little story that
go ahead.
I have spoken about at Stolen Youth when I spoke there. I was, by the time I was 14, I was now like going from across state lines. And at one point I went to Anaheim, California. Anyone knows about Anaheim, California knows that it's the land of Disneyland. And I was with a trafficker, and he, out of the traffickers I had been with, he was probably the nicest. And if you made your quota, which was $1,000 a day, you got $300 back. And I...
Yes. Are you there?
Disneyland.
We lost you for about 10 seconds. Your phone went out for about 10 seconds.
Sorry. I went to Disneyland for 30 days. I went to Disneyland every day, and I paid for my ticket, and I had my little mini skirt on and my stilettos, and I rode the teacups, and not one person asked me where my parents were for 30 days at Disneyland. So when, you know, in society, when people live their normal lives, we want to think that, oh, these girls are being, you know, people are asking them if they need help. But that, especially back then, that nobody, it's easier to turn a blind eye because nobody wants to know that ugliness. And unfortunately, so no, the answer is no. No, nobody asked me. Nobody worried about me. And I can say now that we've came a long ways. The police officers have came a long ways, and we are making more of an effort. But unfortunately, back then, that effort was not being made.
Okay. So let's get, you know, fast forward. How did you get out of that world?
I got out of that world through community. I was probably about 34 years old, and by this time, I had formed an addiction. I was homeless now, like the intersectionality that you were speaking of really took effect. And I was, now there's all these other different layers. And another girl who is a survivor talked me into going to an art workshop at an organization called OPS, which stands for Organization for Prostitution Survivors. They had an art workshop. I didn't have anything else to do, and I went there, and the lady who teached art was like, hey, you should paint. And I was like, what are you talking about? I don't paint. And come to find out, I'm a really good artist. And so I started going there every week, and I just started surrounding myself with survivor community. And sooner or later, I got my first job at youth care as a youth counselor. And then I eventually worked at Seattle Op. And then I got my position here with my partner, Christine. And now I'm the director of survivor services. So really, ultimately, it's so simple. It's kind of hard. Community is what got me out. Being around like-minded people, being around survivors who were having the same struggles as me, the same stories as me, and we were able to help each other and lean on each other.
Okay.
And
so tell me how is human trafficking and drug trafficking intertwined?
I think it's intertwined because it's a way to control people who are being trafficked. Like, it's a lot easier to control a girl who has an addiction of fentanyl or heroin or whatever the case may be. Like, it's very much easier to control her because she doesn't want to be sick. She doesn't want to feel bad. And that's a quick fix. Like, when you're in that life, getting high becomes part of your daily routine. So, of course, you're going to get these traffickers who figure that out. And now not only can they control you because they want to
make
sure they
access to the drugs.
Yeah. Now they're controlling if you're sick or not. And
okay.
So, it really becomes.
So let me ask you this. Seattle King County has spent a huge, phenomenal amount of money making homelessness worse. Having an approach to drugs that have resulted in 3,000 people dead of overdoses in the last 3 years. Crime, petty, property, violent, and otherwise has skyrocketed. That's the last 15 years in Seattle, King County. What would you do to change that, given your expertise from having lived through all this?
Well, I think that somebody once said to me that having no consequences has consequences. So I think that we need to hold people accountable. We need to not just walk over the people that who are clearly have hit rock bottom, who are on our streets, and we have to love them enough to tell them, like, you have to get up, you have to get some kind of treatment, you have to do what's right for you, because at the end of the day, that's the only person that can do it. And sometimes a person needs a push to do that, like most of the time. I have children, I fought my addiction, and I had to have, you know, my kids be like, hey, mom, I'm not talking to you until you get clean. I'm not doing, you know, we're not gonna keep letting you do this. And that's what ends up saving, you know, survivors and addicts' lives, is the people being willing to love them so much that they'll call them out on their BS.
Is there anything in particular that politicians are talking about that you support, or anything they're talking about that you harshly oppose?
I testified on the SOAP order, which is Stay Out of Areas of Prostitution. Mm-hmm. I'm really proud of the work that the Seattle Council, Kathy Moore, and the other survivors who have worked on this have done, because it's the first time where we're holding buyers and the traffickers accountable. Mm-hmm. We now can charge them with the SOAP order, and it keeps them out of areas of prostitution. And then what that also does is give more resources to the women we serve, because there's a lack of resources. And of all of Seattle, we only have 7 beds right now, like technically 7 survivor beds. And we have way more women than that are leaving trafficking. So
yes.
I'm really dedicated to making sure that we have wraparound services that matter, not wraparound services where we're just putting a person in a room and closing the door so they can get high. No, that's not enough. We need to make sure that we're with them and we walk through them, through these challenges, finding, you know, if it's treatment, if it's a job placement, if it's therapy, whatever the case may be, we need to make these things available for women who are suffering these things, because that's what's going to help them get out.
I really want to thank
choices.
Yeah, Sarah Ann Hamilton, thank you very much for joining us. Sarah is with the organization The More We Love. If people want more information about The More We Love, where do they get it, Sarah?
Well, me and Christine have decided not to put our phone numbers on the radio anymore.
Right.
But you can definitely email me at sarah-ann@themorewelove.org.
Okay. All right. Can they go online to themorewelove.org? Your web?
Yes.
You have
yeah,
a website there?
Yes.
The More?
Yes. We're still building it, but yes, we do have a website.
Okay. Themorewelove.org. Again, that's themorewelove.org. Sarah, thanks so much for sharing your story with us and for the work you're doing to help people right there, literally at ground level, on the street.
Yes.
You know, find their way out the way
yes.
you did.
It and is, I just want to really...
Yes, go ahead.
Can I just say one thing? I just really want to give a shout out to the police officers that I've been working with lately. Like, my relationship with police officers have changed so much. And this is how we're going to change things. And I do want to recognize that there's so many police officers out there right now that are really doing their work and really showing up for survivors in new intentional ways. And I just want to give them a big shout out. So
that's terrific. But I feel the same way. We love SPD. We love our men and women in blue.
Yes.
They're putting up with a lot. And it's not easy to be a cop in Seattle. They do great work. Thank you again, Sarah.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. We'll stay in touch with Sarah Ann Hamilton. People like that, they're just, you know, they do so much good when it's so easy to turn away. 23 minutes after 7. Oh, my goodness. Philip J. Vandervoort III's ready with a social media sweep here. Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right. We got a special announcement coming your way in less than half an hour on the John Carlson Show. A lot of special announcements we've been making this year here on 570 KVI. And we have our senior sports correspondent, Matthew Carlson, previewing opening day. First day of the season for the Seattle Mariners. Right now, we got Philip J. Vandervoort III standing by the social media suite.
Yeah, on Monday when I substituted for you, I mentioned a story about a confrontation involving a Tesla and in Issaquah. And a woman got out of a vehicle, walked back to a Tesla, and in a fit of animosity, keyed the Tesla while the driver was in the Tesla. So the face-to-face confrontation. Now, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We've got an update on this case. I saw it first reported by Jonathan Cho.
Yeah.
Jonathan Cho obtained an Issaquah police report, and it's a press release statement that says a woman, a 55-year-old woman, has been arrested. She's from Bellevue, but she's the one that's been caught on the video that Jonathan Cho posted, belonging to the Tesla driver, getting out of the car in the parking lot over in Issaquah. And
another angry liberal white woman.
Right. And here's what the City of Issaquah Police Department press release says. Issaquah police contacted the victim, confirmed the altercation stemmed from a road rage incident which occurred on March 20th. This was around 3:30 on March 20th. And it says it was not politically motivated that have previously occurred or people have seen depictions of. Targeting Teslas and their owner. So they seem to say that this is a road rage incident, not a Tesla rage incident.
Okay, but the guy who got out of his car in Linwood,
that was
road rage,
sure.
But it was sparked by the fact
that
a woman was driving a Tesla. So what sparked the road rage would be my question before you say politics had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's how the Issaquah Police Department is framing this. So. But they've got a 55-year-old Bellevue woman involved in the incident. She's going to be charged with malicious mischief in the third degree.
She has asked to speak to the manager.
Now, we'd like to meet her. they haven't identified her yet.
I don't know the name has been identified.
Well, if she's charged, so she should be. It's a public matter.
I guess based on the press release, my belief would be that they're forwarding this on to the prosecutor's office, and then the prosecutor's office would file charges, and at that point, that's probably when you end up getting a name to go with the individual being charged. Quick other item that goes back to what you've been talking about earlier on the show involving Seattle's jumpstart tax or payroll expense tax. GeekWire has posted a story about Microsoft President Brad Smith warning that the similar tax on salaries or tax on big business or tax on high income earners that the Washington State Democrats want to do in the state legislature would do, quote, lasting damage, end quote, to the tech sector in the state of Washington. Senate Democrat budget leaders released a revenue proposal for the state's operating budget here last week. It includes a 5% payroll tax on large employers in the state of Washington, so not just in the city of Seattle. This would be applied to the entire state. A new financing intangibles tax on wealthy individuals. Speaking at GeekWire's...
Intangible. That's just another word for wealth tax.
Yep.
Intangibles
Speaking tax. At GeekWire's Microsoft at 50 event at Town Hall in Seattle, President Brad Smith said the proposal would increase prices for consumers, reduce jobs, hurt the tech industry, and he said, quote, I have frankly never been more worried about the future of the tech sector in Washington State as I am today, in part because of this proposal, end quote. Now, what's weird about all this is Microsoft has either kind of as a company casually gone along or quietly gone along with almost all of the Democrats, prominent Democrats that get elected around this state. Well, and now they're finally speaking out about these dangerous things that the Democrats are trying to install with a statewide payroll tax.
I guess also since Microsoft has parked most of its money behind Democrats running for the legislature, and because many Microsoft executives supported the Climate Commitment Act, what made them think they were going to stop there? Okay, these are people that you helped put in office, so you get what you pay for. Sometimes you get a whole lot more than you pay for, and sometimes you get the exact opposite of what you pay for. This is the lesson for Microsoft, a good company. I got a lot of friends there, but they helped shape the political climate that is now coming back to bite them. All right. It all starts today, ladies and gentlemen. Opening day for the Seattle Mariners. And, of course, whenever we talk about anything related to sports, you know who we go to or go to. I was sitting with Matthew. We were watching TV. You said, hey, Matthew, what do you see? All right. Hey, Matthew Carlson. Welcome back to the John Carlson Show. It's opening day, Matthew. How you feeling?
Opening day, Christmas day for baseball fans. They get two Christmases a year. So it's a beautiful day. It's a day of newness and opportunity and optimism. It's and the Mariners get to play at home. So
yes, and if it's not a beautiful day, we can always close the roof.
Yes, you can. Yep.
Okay. So first of all, welcome back. This is your first report of the 2025 Major League Baseball season. How does this season look for the Seattle Mariners? Give us the pros, give us the cons, give us the question marks.
Well, Mariners coming into the 2025 season after narrowly missing the playoffs in 2024 and 2023.
Yes.
2022, of course, a return to the playoffs for the first time since 2001. And ever since they made the playoffs in 2022, that's kind of been the expectation, which is what you want for a healthy baseball team. You want to expect to be in the playoffs regularly.
Okay, so last year, Matthew, the pitching was exemplary. We had a terrific pitching staff and one of the worst hitting teams in baseball.
Yep, no way around it. That's exactly how the 2024 Mariners stacked up. A historically efficient and effective pitching staff, five quality starters that essentially stayed together the whole season.
Yeah, they all had a good year, or some had a great year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and the good news is Mariners got all five of those guys back. Luis Castillo, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, who was your opening day starter today, Brian Wu, and Bryce Miller. Kirby will start the season on the injured list, but everyone is expected to be in the rotation. But like you said, the offense is what struggled. A historic number of strikeouts. Mariners have brought in a couple new pieces. No one huge and big, but a couple new pieces, and really hoping a couple players rebound to their typical selves after down seasons last year.
Like Julio Rodriguez,
Jorge Polanco, Mitch Garver. A new chance, a new opportunity this offseason to get better and recover.
So let me ask Matthew Carlson, how do you feel, optimistic or pessimistic, that we're going to turn it around? You know, Cal Raleigh says, we can go all the way this year, all the way to the show, all the way to the World Series. Of course, he was in an unusually good mood. He just signed, a six-year contract for over $100 million?
6 years, $105 million, just a couple days before the season. I share Cal's optimism. It's opening day. There's no reason not to be optimistic. There is a 162-game slate ahead of us, and there's only one way to be on opening day, and that's optimistic. The Mariners certainly have the talent. They certainly have the expectation to deliver a quality season, and they get to start the season off with four games against, they're not in Oakland anymore, but the A's.
Yes.
Who are
I call them the homeless athletics.
The homeless athletics. Oh, that does have a better ring than the West Sacramento Athletics, but
waiting for their home to be built in Vegas.
I was gonna say they don't even have a home yet. They don't even have one they can go to. That's 2027 or 2028. So they get to start with a four-game set against the A's, and then they get to welcome the Tigers to town. So the Mariners, known for starting particularly slow in the month of April. And even though it's a long season, you don't want to be looking back in September saying, man, I wish we'd won, two games here or three games here. So a strong start in April would be really good for this team, just to have some good vibes and good momentum.
Okay, so we only have a moment left. Let me put the question to you. Why do you think they're going to make the playoffs this year when they came up just short the last couple of seasons?
I think pitching is going to maintain its effectiveness. I'm not sure everyone will be as good as they were last year. And certain players, I think, on the offensive side, they know what they have to do, and they have to do it better. I think they're going to – a couple players, Polanco, Garver, they had historically, in terms of their career-worst seasons last year. I think they can turn it around this year.
All right. By the way, who's the best player in baseball?
The best player in baseball right now is Shohei Ohtani, and he'll be back to pitching this year. So two ways, on the mound and swinging at the plate.
Yes,
he's pretty outstanding. So probably my second favorite Japanese baseball player. My first is Ichiro, who will be in the Hall of Fame this August. So
yes,
that'll be fun. A lot of fun events this summer for the Mariners too.
All right. Very good. That is why Matthew Carlson believes that you have reason to be optimistic. The Mariners just might turn around. What time does everything get underway, Matt?
We got 7:10 at Safeco. Oh, sorry. Well, the old Safeco, T-Mobile Park, downtown at the corner of Edgar and Dave. Mm-hmm. And still lots of tickets available, too.
That's Edgar and Dave, as in Edgar Martinez and Dave Newhouse. What does that tell you, that there's still tickets available on opening day?
Tells them that some folks need to buy them and get down there and watch some baseball.
I think it was the weather. I think the weather is the reason.
Yeah.
That,
yeah, I heard it was quite the storm last night.
Less than advertised. Less than advertised. But I mean, we were having meteorologists, sifting through the Bible to find weather events that were supposed to be as bad as last night. But no, it was just. Rainy, windy, thunder, lightning, and that was about it. Yeah, I mean, if you live in the Seattle area, that was pretty much it. Lots of damage in the not so populated.
In the less, yeah. And hopefully, some of the thunder and lightning translates to the bats and and baseball's there in the stadium.
Yes, and
but
if,
we'll see what happens. Reason to be optimistic.
And if there is, for some reason, inclement weather and you want to go to the ball game, do not worry, because once again, the roof can close. All right.
Yes.
Matthew Carlson,
yes.
Great report. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it, son.
Always a pleasure, Dad. Look forward to joining you on air here down the stretch, down the home stretch, as the John Carlson Show rounds third and heads for home.
Yeah.
And it'll be a good home stretch here. So,
all right.
Love you and look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Matt. It is 7:45 on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. And in keeping with what Matt was just talking about, a special announcement coming your way here on The Commute with Carlson at 8 o'clock. Remember, I give you the secret word of the morning, and you might end up winning $2,025. All you have to do is text a word to our regular text-in line. Just text one word. Usually a one-syllable word to our text-in line, and it takes, what, 10 seconds? You got plenty of time to do it. It's not a race. And 2 days ago, Cheryl from Tacoma came up a big winner. So maybe you could be the next Cheryl. Maybe you could be the next winner. All right. And I promised I was going to be making a special announcement as well. Coming up on the commute during our 7:50 segment. So get ready for that as the commute continues. It's 7:45. And we're back on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. All right, about 8:05, we're going to be talking with a prominent state legislator, Andrew Barkus, who's going to be laying out for you all of the new transportation taxes that they are planning in Olympia. You're thinking, what, you just talked about taxes the other day. No, those are the taxes for the general fund budget, the quadrupling of property tax collections, the imposition of an income tax on employers, not employees. So they think they can get around the prohibition on the income tax by forcing your employer to pay the income. They've got that, and they've got a wealth tax where if you're wealthy, you will be taxed simply for living here. You don't have to buy, sell, invest, or do anything. Just the fact that you're here, they'll hit you up with a fee, a penalty, basically, for being wealthy. Those are the general fund budget taxes. Then there's a whole slew of additional and higher existing transportation taxes that we'll be talking about with State Representative Barkus. Again, this is the most radical legislature in all the years that I have been at the intersection of media and politics. Unbelievable. We'll see how much of it gets through and then what our options are if they do get it through. But I have an announcement that I have to make. As all of you know, a week from tomorrow, man, it's coming up fast, isn't it? A week from tomorrow will be my last day broadcasting. Began in July of 1993 and a couple of timeouts along the way in the 90s. And I have been at it for over 30 years. It will not be easy to say goodbye. But if we're going to say goodbye, let's try and do it together. We will have a going away party. A lot of you have been asking. And it will be held in Kirkland. We are securing the venue right now, but we feel comfortable saying we will have a going away party Friday night, April 4th, and you don't want to miss it. Woo-hoo! The one problem we have is attendance will have to be limited because of the size of the venue. So we are going to be able to accommodate over 200 KVI listeners. And if you would like to be one of them, we will start giving out tickets tomorrow morning. People will be limited to 2 tickets per person. And again, this will be for our going away, leave us alone party next Friday evening. It's going to be a lot of fun. And the one condition that I lay down on this is that it had to be free. So there will be no admission. We have, you know, crowd issues, so we have to do it via tickets, and we'll start giving out those tickets tomorrow. So there's your announcement. If you've been wondering if it's going to happen, yes, it's going to happen, and it'll happen a week from tomorrow in Kirkland.
Keep listening. You'll have a chance to win tickets to attend.
Yes, both during my show and during Ari Hoffman's show. So that'll be a lot of fun. All right. Before we go much further, I have to play, again, I just love this. I have to play Brandon Gill. He's a Republican congressman from Texas. Was questioning Catherine Marr, the CEO of NPR, National Public Radio, yesterday. And he asked her about her previous tweets and how they suggest a pronounced political bias. Here we go.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
It has evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
Apologies, I don't recall that I did.
Okay.
I'd no doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay.
Now, think about that. She tweeted out that she was driven to take a day off work to read this important volume, The Case for Reparations. And then 5 years later, when she's testifying under oath and she's asked about, oh, I haven't read that book. listen, if NPR wants to continue existing, they can do just fine without government subsidies. Okay? Make your own way. You've got a built-in audience. You've got a constituency. I'm sure there are plenty of advertisers. You don't need government money. Not only that, you don't deserve government money either. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. That secret word of the morning happens right after your 8 o'clock headlines. Stay tuned.
4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to hour number 3 of the Thursday, March 27th edition of the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. Great having you with us. And you know what we do every single day, at least for the next month or so, for me, the next week or so, at 8 o'clock, right after the headlines, we enter the KVI Golden Age giveaway contest.
This give you will a be chance. America's new golden age.
Yes, the president asked if he could please promote this contest here. We're happy to give him the time on the airways. All you have to do is text the word I'm about to give you to our regular text in line. That's 206-421-5757. Just that simple. Okay? Shall we do it? Yes, we shall. In 3, 2, 1. The secret word of the morning is swap. Swap. S-W-A-P. Swap as in trade. Would you swap what you're doing now to take a job you didn't like that paid more? Would you take that swap? S-W-A-P. So there you go. Just text the word. Don't add anything else. Just that word. Don't be in a hurry. You have until 9 o'clock. And once your cell device texts that word, you are entered into the contest. And so you can only enter that one word one time for it to count. So just before 9 o'clock, text. Don't call. Text. Swap. S-W-A-P. 206-421-5757. Okay. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, and again, I said I was going to separate out the massive radical tax increases that are being proposed for the general budget for the massive tax increases being pushed for the transportation budget. And with us to let you know just what's coming around the corner, if their plans are not sidetracked or at least heavily amended, is Representative Andrew Barkus. Andrew, state representative from the Yelm area. It's great. Does your district touch the state capitol, Andrew?
Good morning, John. It's great to be with you this morning. No, I get as close as Lacey, thank goodness. Butts up to the Lacey Urban Growth Area, and then it runs, of course, through Thurston County down into Tenino and Bucota, and all the way around Mount Rainier and a lot of Pierce County. So it's a big, big district.
So Andrew Barkus gets to say he represents Mount Rainier in the Washington State Legislature.
I do. That's pretty cool.
Okay.
Pretty
cool. This transportation budget proposal, I'm assuming this was not done in any kind of collaboration with you, because I know you well enough to know that you would never come up with something like this.
No, I tell you, it's a strange year, John. I mean, in all the universe of the legislature and the taxapalooza, as we say, and, you know, I heard Senator Gildon did a great job explaining the operating aspect the other day with you. The budget work that I do in the House, I do bipartisan. I am part of the budget cabinet as the ranking member, working with Chair Fai from day one. We work very closely together on this budget. The budget itself, we started with a no revenue proposal, looking at our shortfalls and, you know, making all the adjustments. The revenue piece, however, that is something that I did not work on. I found out about several weeks ago that, of course, they were looking at new revenue, and there's a whole slate of proposed taxes and fees, and that was whittled down and presented in bill form, House Bill 2043, just a couple of days ago. So knowing full well this budget was crafted in a manner that looked at all these cuts, but it was reliant on new revenue.
Okay.
And of course, I've got a whole different take on it. So,
right. Can you explain something to our listeners? Again, my guest, Andrew Barkus, the point man on transportation policy for Washington Republicans in the State House of Representatives. Washington has the third highest gas tax in the nation, does it not?
Correct. It does.
Okay. Third highest gas tax. We rank 47th. In road quality among the 50 states.
Correct.
How come? Why are we taxed so high and we have some of the worst roads?
Well, John, I would say that it's about missed priorities, missed opportunities, misdirected priorities.
Okay.
The Washington Policy Center just came out with their State of Transportation report, and it's outstanding if you get a chance to read that. Great work as usual. And, you know, one of the key things that they indicated, and I've been saying this for a long time, over the last decade, there has been a shift away from the priorities of maintaining our roads, of building our capacity. There's been a shift to public transportation. So think transit and everything else. Monies have shifted. The dollars that have been poured into Sound Transit to build billions, to build the light rail. You see projects happening in the transportation on the roads, but not to the extent that are needed. It's also driven that cost incredibly high. So you're getting a lot less for a lot more, right? And this has become a problem. And that's why we're, you know, the budgets year after year, we kept saying and seeing the cost of these projects was driving things up. The revenue was not keeping pace with that. It's only a matter of time before this happened. And so, you know, priorities, John, I mean, my priorities and what we've been pushing for, and we have done in a bipartisan way over the years, increasing maintenance and preservation, getting at this backlog with our bridges and roads that need to be maintained throughout the state. Our ferry system, of course, you and I have talked about many times. Mm-hmm. But, John, the money is still being poured into, and the money that I'd like to use, the climate commitment dollars, which is a gas tax, it's still being poured into to the tune of almost $2 billion into more of the climate agenda,
right.
More transit, more electrification, as opposed to using those dollars, those existing resources right now to take care of the issues within this budget, as opposed to raising taxes.
So
pretty straightforward.
So again, here's what a lot of people find mystifying, because I thought that gas tax dollars had to be used primarily for roads and bridges.
They do.
And yet, here again, third highest gas tax. We rank 47th in road quality. What are all these other states doing that we're not, that they have much better roads and much lower gas taxes?
Well, I'll tell you what these states are doing differently. They didn't just have 12 years of the Jay Inslee administration, mm-hmm. period. Okay. I mean, I think that's a good start point.
Yeah.
And because you think about the Washington State Department of Transportation, that's an executive cabinet level, so those are his people. And those, again, I go back to those priorities. John, the gas tax is 18th Amendment protected. It's protected in the Constitution. Right. It has to be used for roads and bridges, and it is. But it is only part of the overall revenue that we take in. It's okay. A significant part, but it's not all of it. There's fees and registration, and think of all the other things that are out there.
Sure.
So those monies are directed towards that, but it's not enough.
And so those other fees, those other taxes, those other assessments, mm-hmm. that money which used to be used for roads is now being redirected to transit purposes, multimodal, et cetera.
Multimodal. Exactly. Okay. And see, John, that's, you know, when you look at this, it's complicated. There's a lot of different, what we call buckets, right? Buckets of money, and they do different things. And then a couple of years ago, we passed the Climate Commitment Act, and they did a package called Move Ahead, and they put all this money into their projects, their priorities around the climate. Again, let's point back to Jay Inslee and Governor Inslee's agenda. And so instead of using those dollars and then allowing for multimodal dollars to go to other areas, they didn't. They used both.
Don't.
So what I've been trying to say for a long time is, let's take those climate commitment dollars, put them in there, and then redirect those multimodal dollars into our roads and our bridges and preservation. It's not hard to do. It's just they're not doing that in the grand scheme of things because they want to use this Climate Commitment Act money as intended for carbon reduction, quote unquote.
You know, don't hybrid and electric buses use roads? I mean,
they do indeed.
You can make the case if you're pro-transit, you better have a good highway and road system for them to run on. All right.
They do. As a matter of fact, they want their own roads. They don't want any cars on them. So, yeah.
So let's go into some of the details here. It's $4.5 billion in new transportation taxes. They would raise the gas tax 9 cents. Mm-hmm. They would introduce a new highway fee that would be paid at registration. How would that work?
Well, it's an interesting model, and you know what's kind of surprising, John?
They use it in Virginia.
Road usage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been talking about the road usage charge, which is fraught with problems, you know, privacy, odometer readings, all that stuff. And here's this very simplistic model that they're using in Virginia. It's an equation based on your efficiency of your car, on miles traveled. They use the national data on, you know, how to figure out what your car's miles per gallon rating is. Come up with a calculation, come up with a dollar amount, and add it on to your registration fee. So, you know, depending on the efficiency of your car, it could be $40, it could be $150. And it starts at 25 miles per gallon. So the point being is that anything that, you know, if you've got an old gas guzzler or pickup truck, you're already paying your quote unquote fair share because you're buying more gas, right? These efficient cars are not. So this is a balancing mechanism. No odometer reading. It's a pretty straightforward way to put more money into the transportation account and take more money out of your pocket.
Remember when liberals used to love cars with high gas mileage? Now they'll punish you for driving one.
what do they like to say? You're a victim of your success, right? We have created an incredible system of efficiency with our motor vehicles. Our internal combustion engine, our diesels are cleaner than ever. They just hate fossil fuels. They can't balance out what they want. They hate the fact that we've got this more efficiency, that not enough money, but they also hate fossil fuels and they just want electricity. Well, just get on the bus. You know, it's okay. Kind of this crazy back and forth.
So we have an increase in EV fees from mm-hmm. $225 to $275. I guess that's when that's in the Senate version. They would increase the hybrid fee. They would index all of these tax increases to inflation, so they will automatically escalate without an annual vote.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So they're increasing your taxes, but they don't have to go and be on the record voting for them.
Yeah. Yes, I'm working primarily the gas tax is the concerning one, John, because this is done in a lot of different states, indexing to inflation. It's been talked about before, but it does remove that oversight from the legislature because as a great testifier said on Tuesday, it puts it on autopilot. And John, if you go back and look at and index into inflation, just think what we just went through. We had 7, 8, 9% inflation. That would have indexed the gas tax up to around 65, 70 cents a gallon.
Yeah. Great
so,
point.
So very concerning. It should come back to the legislature to make the decision and be on the record for either voting yes or no for that. And it should be justified, right? It should have a reason and a debate and our, you know, all the different things. So we'll see if that stays. I'm going to be offering some amendments that will probably redirect that along with many other things as we get into the final states.
Okay. So a couple of questions. First of all, what would an Andrew Barkus transportation package look like?
Well, I tell you, the first thing would be, John, is we need to, number one, look at using existing revenues, all existing revenues, and reprioritize, as we've talked about, with roads and bridges in our main transportation system.
Right.
And that includes using the Climate Commitment Act. As long as that's in place, and they spent $20 million defeating an initiative to make sure it's there, then we should use that.
I love that idea.
Thing is, John,
I love that idea.
There is no reform being presented. I've been talking to a lot of people, and I know that, again, I'll point back to Washington Policy Center and the great work there, but also I've been working on, I have another meeting today. There's a lot of opportunity for reform, and I know what we see happen in the federal level with DOGE and such. You know, it's about time to look at that in Washington State, and I would start with the Transportation Department. I would start going into what it takes to do these projects. And you can't keep saying that these increases are just inflation and cost of goods. No, it's our policies, John. We've got to look at that from the environmental justice to climate to stormwater, everything that has added increased cost to these projects to build. And you reprioritize. Take care of the maintenance preservation. Do the different things. That's where I would start, John. We definitely have to look at revenue. And if we're going to start with what we have first. I would also shift, by the way, the sales tax on new vehicles out of the operating budget into transportation, because the operating budget should have been funding transportation for the last 10 years, and they didn't back when we had big surpluses. So there's revenue that we have, using it more efficiently, of course, you know, more conservative approach fiscally, and making sure that we're doing what the people are actually need to be done and lower those costs, right? Lower those taxes.
So and that's a wonderful idea.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you real quickly, as time grows short here, you've been in Olympia for a long time. This is easily the most radical session ever in terms of tax increase proposals.
Yeah.
Do you see the pushback beginning? Is there any kind of political backfire forming, or is it still too early?
I hope so. And I'm going to take this moment for you. I want to thank you for 30 years. Of all your service and being on the airwaves and sharing our messages and allowing a platform for people like myself and others to be able to spread this message to your listeners. And we're going to miss you, but we're excited for your next adventure. I will say, John, that we have got to turn the tide. If people don't take a look at what's going on now, and you cannot say these taxes, oh, they're just for the wealthy. Who cares? They can afford it. It's going to affect every single person in Washington State.
Yep.
And when you look at all the aspects, it's time for change. And the only way that changes is by having different representation in Olympia. And I need help. I've been there for 9 years in the minority and fighting against this. It's getting harder and harder. And I would say this is the worst session of my 9 years for many, many reasons, not just in transportation, but as you've talked about, all the other radical policies.
The next several weeks are absolutely pivotal. To the future of the state, to the future of the state's economy, I would argue to the future of freedom in this state. And we need to help the good people. We need to help the Andrew Barkuses. We need to help the Chris Gildons. We need to help the good legislators, and we're going to do the best we can. Thanks so much for the kind words, Andrew, and thanks for the great work you're doing. All right.
Thank you for everything and the opportunity. We'll talk to you again soon.
That's State Representative Andrew Barkus on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 22 minutes after 8. That means Philip J. Vandervoort III can't wait to stand by with the social media sweep, social media from socialists on the John Carlson Show. So things are going crazy in Olympia, but seem to be going just fine in the nation's capital. So That's what makes it so fun to do radio right now at a time like this. All right, Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is happening? Social media from Socialists.
Yeah, let's get everybody updated on a couple of stories I found, and one revolves around an officer-involved shooting in Seattle at a South Seattle police precinct that appears to be, I think by most criteria, unfortunately, a suicide by cop.
Yeah.
The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And what I'm going to read you is a post from a former Stranger writer. And the Stranger writer used to be Hannah Craig. And then she posted what appears to be an Instagram post about the Stranger reporting on what happened at this Southwest precinct for the Seattle Police Department, which came from the Stranger on March 24th, 2025. So the Stranger post on Instagram says, video of officer involved shooting at Southwest Precinct shows a quick violent escalation. And Hannah Krieg responds to this saying, officer involved shooting is copaganda meant to obscure responsibility of the cop. But she manages to omit a whole lot of relevant and important information that's been reported about this. So I guess this is just her willful blindness to, one.
Yeah, that's why she fit in. That's why she fit in so well at the Stranger.
One, an armed suspect jumped over a fence to trespass and get inside this precinct lot.
Right.
Officers used less lethal force to start.
Yes.
That did not deter this person that was armed with a knife. That suspect did not relent, kept advancing as the officers were telling him to stop. That is when gunshots were fired. So instead of acknowledging the mental health status of this armed suspect, she just reflexively blames police and omits a whole lot of other relevant information.
See how easy it is to be a lefty? Just ignore most of what's happening around you.
Yeah. Now, Dow Constantine, you talked a little bit about earlier in the show, gave his final State of the County address yesterday, and he's still grasping on to this desperate position that homelessness is always driven by the cost of housing. So let's run it one more time. This is what Dow Constantine, King County executive, said yesterday.
It's been critical to counter the scarcity of available and affordable housing as our county population grows. But we know too well that many of our neighbors simply do not have a safe place to call home. While many would like to argue otherwise, homelessness is, at its core, a housing issue.
He's learned nothing.
We're advancing multiple strategies to bring more people inside, including our health through housing.
You've been doing that
initiative
for 15 years. How's it work?
And you heard everybody chuckle. Were they chuckling because they know how wrong he is? And even if this was a reasonable thing to say, he's the one that's causing all of the housing affordability problems, the lack of new development. He's at the top of the pyramid in King County politics. These things are all happening under his watch.
Well, so crime, remember, crime, you have the county prosecutor.
Sure.
You have the county running the jails. You have the county running the juvenile justice facility. So crime, drugs, where we've had 3,000 dead people from overdoses in 3 years. Homelessness, which has proliferated, even as we have quite literally spent hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to supposedly address it. It's all gotten worse on his watch. So, of course, he needs a promotion.
Yeah, so he's going to graduate to Sound Transit.
Oh, my goodness. In one-party government, nothing succeeds like failure. You are listening to The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI, 31 minutes after 8 o'clock. 24 minutes to 9 o'clock on The John Carlson Show. To the KVI text line we go. Again, you can text the secret word of the morning, which is SWAP, S-W-A-P. You have 23 and a half minutes left to text that word.
P as in penguin.
Yes. SWAP to 206-421-5757. And then after you do that, you can tell me what's on your mind and text me a message at 206-421-5757, like Bob from the 509 area code. That's Eastern Washington, Central Eastern Washington. Says, John, while you're talking about taxes, don't forget so-called user fee increases. They just voted to increase hunting and fishing license fees by 38%. These fees don't go to managing the resource. They're dumped into the general fund, more money for crappy urban liberal projects. I like how he put that. And yeah, user fees, fares going up yet again, ferry costs. These from people who have completely, especially during the Inslee era, and why on earth the news media allowed him to get away with that, I don't know, just completely mismanaged our ferry system. Again, it gets down to priorities. At a time when we set a record for worst on-time performance by ferry vessels, Jay Inslee's vision, his top priority, was pulling two jumbo ferries out of circulation for 2 years so they could be recalibrated and reworked and rebuilt into electric ferries. So Jay Inslee's major priority was not improving the miserable on-time performance of the ferry vessels. It was making the on-time record even worse by pulling two big ferries out of the water so they could be converted into e-ferries. Bob Ferguson stopped that. Bob Ferguson said, for heaven's sakes, no, we're not going to do that. So good for him. And again, Bob in the 509 area code is correct. Not only taxes, new taxes being created, not only existing taxes going up, but user fee going up. Hunting and fishing licenses. Yeah, there are a lot of wealthy people who hunt and fish, but you know what? Most people who hunt and fish aren't. And so we keep hearing about how regressive and unfair our tax system is. And look at who's trying to increase working class taxes like the gas tax and user fees. Okay, it is 40 minutes after 8 o'clock. I absolutely love this story because it tells you a lot about the out-of-touch mindset of our elite news media. Article in the New York Times. The vicious cycle of extreme heat leading to more fossil fuel use. A new report illustrates a concerning dynamic. Record heat last year pushed countries to use more planet-warming fossil fuels to cool things down. Translation, as climate scientist Roger Pilkey put it, global energy demand for heating is about an order of magnitude larger than energy demand required for cooling. As the planet warms, it projects a decrease in energy demand for heating. Five times larger than projected increase due to more cooling. In other words, energy demand for heating, which takes more energy than cooling, energy demand for heating is dropping five times more than projected. That's good news. That is good news. That means it's warmer in more places sooner than expected, which means less energy required to turn the heat on. And yet, how does the New York Times translate this good news? Well, it's so hot in some places, people are using air conditioners where they didn't used to use them before. That heats the planet. But again, you need less energy to cool a room than you do to heat a room or a home or a building. Roger Pilkey says, the New York Times is mad, big time mad, that people around the world are now rich enough to have air conditioners. They blame that on climate change. They ignore the fact that people in hot places want air conditioning just like we have. In other words, this should be seen as a sign that people can now afford creature comforts like air conditioning that they didn't used to afford. He goes on to say, again, this is a series of tweets on Twitter X, says, using increased energy consumption, as the New York Times does, as an indication of something bad happening, is profoundly Malthusian, even anti-human, or at least anti-poor people getting rich. Well put. Well put. Rising temperatures. I haven't heard anyone focus on this yet, but rising temperatures actually reduce energy use because heating is much more energy intensive. It requires much more energy than cooling. And yet, how does the New York Times spin it? The vicious cycle of extreme heat leading to more fossil fuel use. You are listening to The John Carlson Show. Quick story here. This is good news. Remember the initiative to allow police to chase bad guys? Remember the proliferation of auto theft and dangerous driving on the roads when police were not allowed to chase cars anymore? That resulted in Initiative 2113, which you qualified for the ballot and was going to the ballot, and the Democrats were scared that it was going to go on the ballot, so they voted to make it law. They didn't dare try and mess with it. Last week, we got some numbers in from the Auto Theft Task Force of Puget Sound, which, again, keep in mind, the initiative gave police officers, restored their authority to pursue criminals on the street. The result is it has accelerated the trend in a free fall in auto theft. The reality is right there. Car theft in Washington, which at one point when we had these restrictions on police pursuits had hit number one in the nation, car theft is now at a 15-year low. In 2010, there were 4,036 cars stolen during the month of February. That got as high as 8,000 cars stolen during the month of February while the police were not allowed to pursue bad guys. Now that number is down to 3,346. So from 8,000 in 2022 to 3,346 because we went over the heads of the legislature. Good for us. Good for Brian Haywood. Thank you again, Brian. Thank you again. Let's Go Washington. Check out their great website, letsgowashington.com. All right, 47 minutes after 8 o'clock as the Commute with Carlson continues, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Back we are. It is 51 minutes after 8. In other words, it's 9 to 9. You guys, I just have to play this again. I love it so much.
Another one.
One of the youngest members of Congress is Congressman Brandon Gill. He is from Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area. And he was questioning the head of National Public Radio, Catherine Marr, their uber woke CEO, who is making the case for Congress continuing to give NPR your money, public money, to keep their radio station going, their radio network, I should say, going. Well, it turns out Catherine Marr loved to tweet. And so Brandon Gill simply went back and found several of her tweets and asked her about them yesterday. And here is how their conversation went.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
It has evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
Apologies, I don't recall that I did.
Okay.
I'd no doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay.
She doesn't recall reading a book that she tweeted out that was so important that she took the day off to read it. Okay.
Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't? You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
I think I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
It sounds like you're saying that white people feel superior.
I don't believe that anybody feels that way, sir. I was just reflecting on my own experiences.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes, you did. You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt, yes, reparations, yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations, sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted. Okay, how much reparations have you personally paid?
Sir, I don't believe that I've ever paid reparations.
Okay, just for everybody else.
I'm not asking anyone
to
pay reparations.
Seems to be what you're suggesting. Do you believe that looting is morally wrong?
I believe that looting is illegal, and I refer to it as counterproductive. I think it should be prosecuted.
Do you believe it's morally wrong, though?
Of course.
Of course. Then why did you refer to it as counterproductive? It's a very different way to describe it.
It is both morally wrong and counterproductive, as well as being
illegal. You tweeted, it's hard to be mad about protests in reference to the BLM protests, not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression. You didn't condemn the looting. You said that it was counterproductive. NPR also promoted a book called In Defense of Looting. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars?
I'm unfamiliar with that book, sir, and I don't believe that was at my time at
NPR. You tweeted that you read that book, but...
I don't believe that I did read that.
It's just, just wrecked her. Anyway, as someone who's been in this industry for a long time, it's very simple. NPR, which, by the way, in Seattle is one of your more highly rated stations, does not deserve and does not need public subsidy. There's no reason for taxpayers to cough up money for national public radio or for public broadcasting. There's a market for it. They can make money with pledge drives, with foundation grants, and with advertising. I mean, they take breaks. They just play music during their breaks instead of running ads. Why not run a couple of ads and a little less music between station breaks? So anyway, thought you would enjoy that. All right. A quick reminder. Yes, we will have a going away party here for the John Carlson show. For John Carlson, anyway, the guys connected with the show, they're still going to be here. Some exciting news coming forward on that in due course. But it's going to be a week from tomorrow. It's going to be Friday evening, April 4th, and tickets are free, but they are also limited. So we're going to tomorrow give you a way to get your tickets. So be listening for that. And you still have a couple of seconds left, a couple of minutes left to text the word SWAP, S-W-A-P, SWAP, for our secret word of the day for our golden giveaway contest. Let's talk again tomorrow.